Yes, the tide is high. And that brings me to my interview today, and that is with Haley Zemel of the California King's Tide Initiative. Hi, Haley.
Hi, great to talk to you.
Very interesting. King tides, it seems they've been swimming up in my view the last year or two. I've been noticing some things about it, articles and TV things. Very interesting. Why should we be interested about king tides, Haley?
It is interesting. So king tides have been something that climate scientists have been looking at as a way to kind of look into the future and see what the average high tide or the average daily tide will look like in 50 to 100 years. With sea level rise. But only recently has the term king tide become kind of popular among all groups, academia, media. It really became popular after Superstorm Sandy last year. That storm coincided with a king tide, which is a natural phenomenon, but it just goes to show how hazardous a storm event can be when it's coupled with really high water. And then if in the future you have that really high water on kind of a regular basis, you can expect that you'll have more storms that are coupled with that high water. So it's kind of a way to kind of see how water is flooding our canals and help prepare and adapt to this rising water.
Fascinating. I mean, it's something that was, I suppose, just a quirk, an anomaly in the past, but has really, because of global warming and the sea rise, it has taken on serious proportions then.
Yes, exactly. So king tides, it's a natural phenomenon. I want to make that clear. It happens every year during the solstices in summer and winter, and it happens due to the gravitational pull of the sun and moon on the Earth during the new and full moon phases of each month. And then during those new and full moon phases around the summer and winter solstices, you get these grand tidal fluctuations, and that's natural. But as sea level rises, these king tides will also get higher. And what we're seeing is even with just a slight increase in water level, if that's coupled with a storm event, it can be really hazardous.
You're getting the surge from the ocean and coupled with the high tides and the bigger waves, that's a real bad combination then.
Exactly. It's kind of fueling the fire, except it's water.
I suppose it's the unforeseen. I mean, we knew it was going to happen, but it's now foreseen. It is happening. And so where does the California King Tides Initiative come into it? What is it, and what is it trying to do?
The California King Tides Initiative engages the community, tries the community to go out there and document these flooding events that occurred during the highest tides of the year. And that does a lot of things. One thing, it gets people to see firsthand what's happening in their community, because if you don't make a point to see it, you could miss it unless you happen to be passing by. But it also allows us to document these moments, and it helps natural resource managers and planners. So city planners have to think about rising water and what that's going to look like in the future. If you're going to put in a bridge or a stair access way to a beach, that's going to be pointless if it's submerged during high tides, right? And there's already roads in Sausalito, Marin County, you see the sea level come up underneath highways and, across cities. And that's where the sea level is now several times a year.
Right.
And so if we can expect that to be the average tide, we can see that will be the average scenario in 50 to 100 years.
Wow.
And that's just not going to work. So people take pictures of these events And we asked them to go to our website, californiakingtides.org, and load up their pictures to our Flickr site. And then when we have those pictures, we get a lot of requests from natural resource managers and planners who use these images in their communications about sea level rise adaptation strategies.
A picture tells a thousand stories is really how you're doing it then, because scientists can visual and governmental people can visually see the effect.
That's exactly right. You know, there are a lot of sea level rise models out there, and there's a lot of graphs and things that people can look at, but these are images, and that's something that's real that people can latch onto and that they can, you know, gravitate towards. And another thing that these images are starting to help with is actually to validate these sea level rise models that are out there, because it's kind of a fine scale thing. It's hard to make a model for the whole world. And in fact, you can't. So that's why there's been so much debate about how much sea level will rise and where. We've actually been starting to work with NOAA and NASA, you know, and USGS, and try to use these images as actual data that can help validate and verify their sea level rise models that they're making.
Cross-pollination then into the scientific field then.
Absolutely. So it's a way that the community can interact with managers and policymakers and researchers, and it's a way for them to get involved and have a say and show us what they're seeing.
Obviously government is responsible around the American shores. What specific departments are actually responsible for water rise, or is like the Army Corps of Engineers? How is that dealt with?
Any agency that has coastal jurisdiction is involved. So, some of the more common ones are the California Coastal Commission, and in the San Francisco Bay Area, the Bay Conservation and Development Commission, or some people just call it BCDC. NOAA is involved in a lot of what's going on with sea level rise, obviously not just in California. Agencies that are involved with building railroads and are building highways and responsible for making sure that those will be accessible in 50 years. So Caltrans is what I'm trying to say.
Caltrans, yeah. Well, how does that tides and excuse me, flooding causes damage, and at that point usually insurance companies come into the picture, and how are they working? Obviously it's an exposure for them. How are they handling this?
Absolutely. That's a really important question right there. That's something that is kind of a hot topic actually. So FEMA offers elevation certificates that you then, you know, wherever you live, if you want flood insurance, you might need to get a FEMA elevation certificate if you're living at sea level or just above. Insurance companies are, you know, thinking long and hard about how they're going to insure people who are living at an elevation that is expected to be submerged in 50 to 100 years. It's a hot topic, and I think it's in the works right now. I certainly don't have a great insight in what direction that's going. I have heard a little talk about possibly having insurance companies be involved in determining where new development should go, be residential development or anything that they would have to insure. It's an interesting topic.
Yes, that's very sticky, just thinking of it. A lot of variables there, and they want to protect their investment.
And with this whole what just happened with the Philippines, a Filipino representative, they were having a climate change conference, an international climate change conference, and this Philippine representative was actually trying to hold accountable the countries that are most responsible for climate change. Mm. So that gets even stickier.
I'm sure he wasn't well received.
Yeah, but, you know, people are angry, and there are low-lying countries that are having to worry about sea level rise, and there's predictions which they're not that easy. So that's one way that the California King Tides gets involved, because we don't advocate one way or another. We're basically saying we are already experiencing hazardous events with high water, and we want you to go out there and capture it. And we're starting to work with these agencies that can use the information to validate their models. If there are areas of the world that are claiming, researchers are claiming that might be submerged in 50 years, having these images over time can document a living record of change. And that might be right, or it might be wrong. There might be something else going on. There might be some adaptation that we can implement that will help us deal with that in advance. So the California King Tides Initiative pretty much just wants people to go out there and help document what's going on right now.
Yeah, it sounds a very non-intrusive thing, doesn't it? But very, very effective.
Yes, I think so. And it's been well received from researchers and natural resource managers reaching out to us. And we've actually even started to develop a citizen science program. Hmm. So basically, during these King Tide events, and there's one more, so we've just had several in December and the beginning of January, and then January 29th through 31st, we'll have the last major King Tides of the season. And we basically ask people to go out, and if you're interested, and photograph your coastline during that time and give us those photos, and those photos can become useful. And we have a few hints on our website about, how to make the images more useful. But for those who want to get more involved, we do have a citizen science program. So if you go to our citizen science program page, you can become a part of our photo monitoring program. And that's where we have specific sites set aside with specific directions on, face northwest, standing at the end of the footbridge, at this location. And these are areas that researchers and planners have reached out to us and said, we need pictures of these places. Yeah. So those images are becoming immediate data as soon as you get them to us, and we can use them. And we credit, the photograph remains the photographer's image. We're basically just using the picture.
Well, tell me a little about yourself, Haley. How did you get involved in this? What brought you to this?
Well, I actually came up to the Bay Area on a fellowship, and I was in that fellowship. I was working with the Ocean Science Trust, which kind of helps the state integrate science into their policymaking decisions. Right. So the California King Tides Initiative is a state and nonprofit and private supported initiative to engage people on the issues of sea level rise. And as a fellow, I was encouraged to help out with this initiative, as well as there's another kind of sister initiative called Thank You Ocean. And also as a fellow, I was encouraged to attend executive meetings and just get involved in as many things as I could. And climate change and sea level rise is just top of the list right now in California. There is something that is going to need attention and has been needing attention. So this is something that the state has been proactively getting involved with. But what's interesting, in one of my early meetings that I got to attend, one of the executive meetings, it was a group of several state agencies that have ocean and coastal jurisdiction getting together and talking about climate change and sea level rise. And I remember in that meeting, they said for the first time, all right, we are going to start talking we're going to start talking about climate change with the public, because it's been kind of a contentious issue.
Yeah.
And it has gotten to the point where you can't ignore it anymore.
Right.
And not that the state was ignoring it, but it's difficult to address something that your constituents are not necessarily willing to talk about.
Right.
So that was an interesting moment for me to hear. And but it has gotten to a point where we don't need to talk about the causes of sea level rise or who's to blame or whatever, but whatever the problem is, it's happening, and we need to plan for it, and we need to plan adaptation strategies.
Well, exactly. And that's the thing. California, obviously, a little better than most places, but it appears certainly in political circles, there is a lot of deniers, more than the percentage of people who don't believe it in the population, I would think. That must make difficult to make inroads in the political system, do you think?
I think actually being in California, we are lucky. California has been pretty proactive about dealing with climate change issues, and definitely people can argue that it's something that should have been dealt with sooner. There are some climate scientists from 50 years ago who have been screaming at the top of their lungs, this is something we need to think about.
Mm-hmm.
But so there definitely was opportunity to get involved earlier. But as far as the country goes, California has been pretty good about staying on top of this issue.
Mm.
So Marin County just received funding from the Ocean Protection Council to develop a sea level rise adaptation team and to help incorporate sea level rise planning strategies into their local coastal planning, which is something that is mandated by the California Coastal Act, that every county needs to plan for short and long-term development of their coastal communities.
Right.
And so Marin has just recently received funding to help incorporate sea level rise into that planning. And the California Coastal Commission, that's an agency that offers the majority of permits on coastal planning, pretty much anything except some areas in the bay. And they are recently starting to incorporate sea level rise adaptation strategies into that planning as well.
Mm.
So saying, if you're planning on building a road, you need to, I'm not sure of the numbers they're using for sea level rise, because that's a little bit up in the air at the moment. The Army Corps of Engineers is suggesting that we use a conservative estimate of 5 feet of sea level rise by the end of the century.
Wow.
And that might be dramatic. That might be way more than we will actually see. But what they're saying is you're going to put in this infrastructure, it should be useful. You should know for sure that it's going to be useful by the end of the century.
Human structures, things we build, are affected. But obviously nature is affected, like wetlands would be inundated and things like that. How, because it's happening so quickly, would that happen, or can they adjust? How does that work?
I love that question. That's a really important question, and it's something that's hard for a lot of people to really care about unless it's something you work on. It's something that you actually are involved with. Wetlands, inundation, it's a huge problem. So wetlands, California has lost, something like 90% of its wetlands, and wetlands are an important buffer to sea level rise. Climate change in general, when you start talking about ocean acidification and carbon sequestration and stuff like that, wetlands are really important for that, but also for sea level rise. They offer a large span of land that has vegetation on it that can withstand water, that can withstand salt water. So what you get is, when you have these high waves and when sea level rises and you get these storm events that bring water more inland than we're usually comfortable with, what happens is this vegetated wetland can flow down that water. Mm. And so by the time it gets to, well, the idea is that it won't get to residential areas and businesses and stuff like that. So yeah, wetland restoration is a huge part of planning for sea level rise and adapting to sea level rise. But the problem is wetlands should be able to migrate inland naturally. They have over time. They've migrated with no problem. Mm-hmm. When the sea level rises, it will just move inland a little bit. But when you have urban wetlands that are backed up against urban infrastructure, highways and roads, there's nowhere for it to go. So it will just become submerged, and its buffering capabilities are lost. So there's a lot of effort for wetland restoration, and BCDC, the Bay Conservation and Development Commission, is heavily involved with that, and so is Save the Bay, a huge San Francisco Bay Area wetland restoration advocacy group, and they provide a lot of volunteers just to carry out the manpower of wetland restoration. Also, other state agencies, the California Coastal Conservancy is heavily involved, and I guess we've already started. I'm talking about California. One of the largest transitional zone restorations in the world. It's 600 acres in the South Bay. Oh. They're restoring the salt ponds that Cargill was using. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that whole battle that's been going on.
Yeah. For many years, yeah.
Yeah, so that's still a battle, but still the salt ponds that have been acquired for restoration are going forward full force. If only we could get some rain.
That we'll work on separately.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned Sandy and obviously Katrina. They weren't per se tides. They were, I suppose, more of a storm surge, but they were an example of a high tide in a way, weren't they? And the effort and the effects of that.
Yeah, exactly. So that storm occurred during a high tide. It occurred during the king tide season, and it is an example of how disastrous something can be with just a little bit more water around. It allows for it to travel further on land and move past those wave attenuation benefits of wetlands, and it gives a glimpse of what we can expect to see every day in 50 to 100 years.
It will become the norm, in other words, yeah.
Yeah, so when California talks about sea level rise adaptation strategies or sea level rise readiness strategies, part of that is accepting that there will be more hazardous storm events. So they'll happen more frequently, and they'll be more hazardous. Mm. So we just need to be ready for that.
Nobody can say they didn't know it was coming.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. And there's some interesting ways of being ready for that, you know. Mm. So I don't want this to sound like a doom and gloom situation. We have waited, a little longer than might be comfortable to plan for such a, disastrous future. But there are some really interesting things going on in Sausalito. There's the Floating Homes Association, and it's kind of like, you know, accepting that there are rising waters, and how do we live in this world and adapt to it, and how do we plan for it in a way that makes it not so scary.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, just have more floating homes, yeah.
Floating homes. Yeah. I mean, that's not going to work in all areas. But, you know, in areas where the water might rise, but it's protected from storm surges, maybe that's okay. And the association, honestly, I don't know that much about it, but I do know that they look into ways to prepare and build homes that are resistant to certain aspects of living on the water. But greening our shorelines is a huge way to get ready for sea level rise, you know, providing that vegetation that that will help buffer the hazards, and also having state regulatory agencies, such as the California Coastal Commission, incorporate climate change planning into the permits they release, and that's something that they've started to do. And I think what's really important is having, you know, at the local scale, you know, managing and regulating at the local scale, because each area is different and will be affected differently. And that's where the California King Tides Initiative comes into play, you know, getting people to go out there and take pictures of what's in front of them.
Right.
You know, what do you see? What are the problems that you see? And what do you want us to know about it?
Just looking at the list of places that are in peril, really, it's the whole coast of California in the bay. I mean, nowhere really is exempt from this. I mean, obviously, we have the Sonoma coast and we have the Petaluma River and the various other rivers that creep up from the bay into Sonoma County. We will all be affected, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And not just in California. I mean, it's the entire coast and the East Coast. And actually, this the King Tides Initiative started in Australia.
Oh.
It was, you know, they're dealing with this there, and it's becoming, and we have a Vancouver counterpart. Wow. So this is a worldwide thing. It's something that you're seeing right in front of you, and you know, as you're seeing that, there are, you know, people across the country or even in other countries that are experiencing similar issues. And then low-lying island nations that, you know, are experiencing hazardous events and flooding and disaster.
Oh, yes, yeah.
It's something that this ocean is affecting us all. We are all close to the ocean and affected by it. So when sea level rises, it's going to affect the world.
Yeah.
And then that comes into, you know, right now we're talking about infrastructure that is inundated during high tides or during storm events, and that includes wastewater treatment plants. Mm. It includes aquifers being inundated with salt water.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So then you get a crisis of, we're already having a freshwater crisis.
Right.
And then that can only lend to it. So there are a lot of levels to planning for climate change and sea level rise. It's more than just having roads submerged and stairs submerged during high tides. Airports, the San Francisco SFO is, its elevation is 9.4 feet or something like that above sea level.
Mm.
So then if you have a, you know, 7-foot high tide, which we get, and then couple that with a storm event and you get a flooded airport. And then you add 3 feet of sea level rise at least by the end of the century, and you have an airport that is always submerged.
Seaplanes make a comeback, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
The king tides are really the precursor, aren't they? They're the things we are beginning to notice, but it will become more common is the real key, isn't it? And as it rises. Now, the king tide itself, how long does that last? Is it just a few hours when it comes up? What is the dynamics of that?
So normal tidal fluctuations from low to high tide is roughly a 6-hour event, just on a regular day. Sometimes it can be less, and sometimes it can be a little bit longer. But with king tides, not only do you have really high tides, but they're usually followed by really low tides.
Hmm.
So it's really a king tidal fluctuation. And when you have a king tide followed by such a low tide, then the tidal height tends to drop pretty quickly. So if there's about, you know, an hour, I would say an hour span during the king tides when you're going to see its peak.
Okay.
And depending on how high it is and if it's coupled with a storm event, it may not matter that you've missed the peak. You might still, you know, let's say the peak is a 7 or let's say it's an 8 foot tide. So you might get there during a 7 foot tide after it has dropped to 7 feet, which is still pretty high.
Right.
And if there's a storm surge, then you could still see dramatic effects.
Right.
But yeah, and if you go to our Flickr site, you can see some pretty dramatic images. Have you seen some of our pictures?
Yes, I did look at the site. Yeah, it was very dramatic. Yes, the submerged bridges and things, and the ramps and stuff. It's really happening.
Yeah, and I think that it's especially amazing to look at some of the photos in Sausalito or on the Embarcadero in Mill Valley, and you see calm water. So the water, it's not rough, it's not a stormy sea.
Mm.
You see calm water that is just flooding into the city, and blue skies, and that just goes to show you that it's not a rainstorm you're seeing, you know, because people are used to seeing floods from rain.
Right.
That's not what you're seeing in those pictures. What you're seeing is where the sea level is, and it's right in your city. And I think that's important to grasp that point. Now, you couple that with a storm event,
and then it
can be even worse. So that's what you know, if you take that moment and couple it with, you know, heavy rains and huge swells in the ocean and high winds, and you could get a really disastrous situation.
Right. I remember some of that in Marin, where it was raining a lot and the high tides, and they both met. It was pretty nasty, yeah.
Yeah. So Marin has just embarked. You know, I don't even think they've started meeting yet, so I don't know any details on it, but they've started this thing called Sea Smart. It's collaborating on sea level Marin adaptation response team. Kind of a ridiculous name, but Sea Smart is easy to remember. And so that was funded by the Ocean Protection Council for them to develop sea level rise adaptation strategies and incorporate sea level rise into their development plans for the county. It'll be interesting to see some of the creative ideas that might come out of this. You know, there's some pretty smart people involved, and it'll be interesting to see some of the adaptation strategies that come out of this.
Yeah, that's humans. They usually need a problem to solve, and then they'll get down to it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Isn't it? they may be drowning up to their necks, but we'll get there.
We'll just all wear scuba masks, and it'll be fine.
Exactly. Well, I say we're in the midst of, we just finished a couple of days of King Tides, and the next ones are coming up at the end of the month. Why don't you tell people again, what can they do to help this, and when they can do it, and how they can contribute to your efforts?
Yeah, absolutely. So if people would like to go to our website, californiakingtides.org, and there you can find dates. So we're promoting January 29th through the 31st as the last King Tide dates. So these are the last dates to kind of be able to witness the dramatic King Tides for winter. I encourage people to go and find the best time to view these tides. So if you go to NOAA.gov and search for their tide charts, you can find the exact time that these high tides will occur in your area or wherever you would like to see the king tides. And then, you know, plan your shoot. Think ahead of time where you might want to go see these high tides, especially, you know, you're broadcasting from some people are going to have to, you know, drive off posts to see this. And right. And you can go to our citizen science page and click on a specific area or the plan your shoot page, and we have some suggested areas to go take photographs from. And we appreciate images of both low and high tide, high tides from a specific location on the same day. Like I said, these king tides, you get really high tides followed by really low tides.
Okay.
So if people want to stick around for about a 6-hour period, you know, go to the city and hang out, and then go back and take another picture, that's awesome. Whatever images we get, we're thankful, even if it's not at the exact high tide. All we ask is that people give us as much information as they can about where they took the photo and the time. And if they can give us information about, you know, what direction the photo is facing and things like that, it helps because we are creating an archive. Right. And we're trying to document a living record of change. So if we'd like to go back another year and take the exact same photo at the same time during a king tide, you know, then this is something that we can compare. And in that way, photos become data.
I love the, the simple way to do it, but so effective. It's visual. You can't help but see.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they're just, you know, they're fun to look at. And, you know, bottom line, we don't want people to get hurt. So, you know, don't put yourself in harm's way. We ask people to, you know, be safe. January, by the end of January, we haven't had a storm. So it could be that, you know, we'll get a storm event coupled with these king tides, in which case it's an opportunity to get some pretty dramatic images. Right. And we don't have very many images from places like Santa Cruz and and Monterey. So we are asking for images from all over. But any pictures that people want to take, we're happy to have.
Yeah. And where do they send them to? Why didn't you remind everyone?
So they can go to our California King Tide Flickr group, or they can go to our website and be directed to the Flickr group from there. And once you're on the Flickr page, you just upload your photos with as much information as you can about where you took the photo and what time. And if you know what tidal height it was, you know, stuff like that is really great information for us because it saves us time later to have to go look that up. So that's important. And then also we ask that people use the Creative Commons license, some rights reserved on Flickr. That will allow us to use the photos for educational purposes and for natural resource managers want to use them for communication strategy if they can.
Oh, I see. Yeah, without let or hindrance, yeah.
And we're really looking forward to ramping up this citizen science page. So if you do want to become part of our photo monitoring program and photograph one of the very specific places we have been requested to document, we encourage people to go to our citizen science page and just follow the directions there. And then load them up to our Flickr site. Hopefully this time next year we'll have a different kind of site that will be easier for us to access the photos, but we're using Flickr for now.
Yeah.
Good. As much information as people can give, that's all I can say.
Beautiful. No, what a great effort, and I'm really glad somebody's doing it in this manner, from the ground up, rather than from a satellite down, per se. I like that.
Right, exactly. And that's exactly what we call it, ground truthing. Sea level rise models. We are using these images to ground truth what people are trying to do with math. So that's great. You've created a model. How well does it work? What do you say in your community? Do these pictures add up to what the model is saying? If not, that's very valuable information, and that allows the researchers the ability to know that they need to tweak the model for that area.
Exactly. Beautiful. Well, I really appreciate the interview, Hayley. Fascinating subject, something that is creeping up on us, literally, and I really appreciate you filling it in.
Well, thank you. I'm really excited that you're interested in it, and I hope your listeners are interested in it, and I hope they take pictures and send them our way.
We will indeed. Thank you so much, Hayley. Hayley Zemel of the California King Tides Initiative. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Arnold. Waves.